would you like to discover the path to become fulfilled and truly successful? Rosalind Perez will tell us how to do this. And what's so special about Rosalind is she's a licensed clinical social worker, identity and nervous system expert, and host of Insightful Essence podcast, featured in Forbes and Time magazine, and a TEDx speaker. And she helps high-achieving women understand why external success feels empty and how to access the clarity and breakthroughs they can't yet articulate. So, Rosalind, tell us about what's the difference between being truly successful and appearing to be successful and not truly being successful.
Heal Podcast with Lily Patrasco shares longevity and anti-aging techniques to stay young forever, increase energy, overcome addiction, and live your longest, best life ever, shared by world's most innovative alternative and traditional health thought leaders, healers, and doctors. Discover quantum healing strategies to heal your mind, body, and soul.
That's such a great question, Lily. And being successful is something that it's felt as a felt process. And what many high achievers do, they just get so good at the recipe of achieving things and pursuing things and performing. And they do it without knowing that most of the time, what drives them to pursue that fulfillment, it's a survival-driven emotion or root or wound. Even because survival can be felt in a way that it feels normal. It can be like for you to like have desire and wants and just to go after things. It can be very much driven in a survival foundation and completely be outside of our awareness. And there are other reasons we can elaborate on that a little bit later on for why you can have all the things in paper, but not necessarily feel successful. And this is what typically happens.
So give me an example of survival-based success that looks like perfect success to the other world, and it really isn't because it makes you so unhappy. Is that one of the causes why so many multimillionaires actually apparently not that happy?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You can have a lot of money in your bank account, and there are multiple researchers recently coming out because of that same reason. You can have a lot of money in your bank account and still feel not successful. So something that we can use as an example is that precisely. Every person defines success to their own definition. Right. Typically what society describes, what your family describes, there's a conditioned way of learning success that somehow through our upbringing, we classify it like this is something that successful people have. So anytime that we fix our focus and our attention to success tied to things that are external to us, we neglect that process of like really feeling successful and being connected with your authentic happiness and fulfillment. And this is something that it sounds like almost a cliche, but it's a felt process. So most of the time that people don't feel fully successful is because they have learned how to be really good at achieving and getting things. But typically what drives these behaviors are wounds such as abandonment, humiliation, unworthiness, rejection, betrayal. And these wounds have a magnificent way to disguise themselves in ways that it feels normal, because people tend to go like, oh, but I didn't have any traumatic event. I didn't experience trauma. My childhood was normal. But something so subtle as getting all A's and good grades in school and being celebrated only when you do good at school can define your identity, can lead you to tie your worth to the good things that you have accomplished, to doing even. Who am I if I don't do? Who am I if I don't get acknowledged or validated after all the hard work that I've done? And that's typically what high achievers and high performers do. They tied their success and their fulfillment to a promised outcome and neglect the emotional process of like having fun and being connected to happiness and joy in the process, even if they're extremely busy. Busyness is not the problem. it's the pursuing the promise that I'm going to feel a certain way once I get this done.
Thank you. So what's the solution for going from survival-based success to feeling truly, authentically fulfilled and successful?
Yeah.
And so what does that even look like? Let's say if you're generally pursuing external things that will hopefully make you feel better, and that's, you know, survival-based success. What does true, authentic, fulfilled success look like, and how can we get there?
Yeah, that's such a great question, because think about this. Every single thing that we desire and want in life, it's because it's promising us an emotional outcome. If I tell you, Lily, that I'm going to give you $10 million, but you don't get to use them ever in your life again, you'll be like, what's the point of having this if I cannot use it, right? So the money in itself, it's not an ultimate goal. What do you want to do with that money? You want to travel, you have want of freedom to spend more time with your family. Okay, those are good goals. But feeling-wise, how would that make you feel? If I spend time with my husband, that makes me feel that I belong. If I get to travel, that ignites my curiosity and my sense of wonder. If I get to help others, it makes me feel connected with the world and connected in a sense of like I am altruistic, happy, I'm selfless. All of those things are emotions, and we rarely spend the time to connect with those emotional outcomes in the process as we work towards that. So we make it about the goal and not about the process. And when we do that, we neurologically train our brain that happiness is completely tied to something external. Once we have a certain achievement and goal to our side, then that's where I'm going to be happy. But this is something that it's been said so much, yet we continue to struggle in society with, because we continue just to become fixated on operating towards success in this manner. But yet we neglect accessing the emotions. Let's say that if you want to feel confident, you can work your way to feel confident in the process. If you want to feel happy, you can work your way to feel happy at the moment and not wait for that emotional outcome, for that goal and achievement, in order for you to give yourself permission to feel proud of yourself or happy because you made it. You can be happy with or without making it. And that makes the process fun. That's why, like you said in the beginning, let's have fun. Let's just kind of like really enjoy this process. That's what it's all about. Like living in that present moment.
Thank you. So are you saying that we shouldn't be chasing like material things? Or are you saying that it's okay to chase those as long as you're enjoying the journey?
It's perfectly fine for you to like go after anything you want. That it's never the problem. Like if you want to have $1 million, 10 million, become a billionaire, that it's never the problem. The survival driven success comes because there's a feeling of lack. And when we go after things, we have an underlying feeling and sense that once we get to that point or that place, then we will be satisfied and happy and rewarded. So we're getting it wrong. You can accomplish, you can have and desire anything. Like who needs a Louis Vuitton bag? No one. But who needs like a general bag? No one. Like it's not about like brand or not, no brand. For example, there are very little things that we actually truly need, which is breath, it's food, a shelter. Other than that is a desire. It's a want. If I want a purse, a regular purse, even if it's a $10 purse, that's a want. If I want a Louis Vuitton bag, that's not the point. So people get fixated on like, but I want like to have all of these things. If there's a problem with that, not absolutely. But are you, what's the source? That's what I take the clients to reconnect with that source. What would that give you in exchange? A sense of worth, a sense of belonging, a sense of acceptance from people, a status in society? And what are you without that? So it's the foundational source, that it's either survival or abundant.
How can someone change their feelings and change their emotions so they can feel authentically fulfilled and successful? Like, if they generally feel driven by the fact that they were humiliated when they were young, or they were rejected, or they were blamed or betrayed by someone in a relationship, how can they change those feelings into positive feelings that will drive them into better outcomes?
Yeah, that is the question, Lily. That is the question that I genuinely believe that society in this generation and this moment in history and life, it's what needs to be answered, because we need to learn a little bit more about our neurology. Those moments when we are children, let's say if I get humiliated at school, and like very young, a very young age, let's say 4 years old, because the brain stores data even from the moment that you're born. And that's the crazy thing. You can feel neglected when you're 2 months old, that it's abandonment. But you know what's the crazy thing is that it stores, and a core belief is born from that emotion that makes you feel uncomfortable. But we don't have language fully developed yet. So what happens is that that core belief that emerges from that situation, whether if you were humiliated or abandoned or betrayed, and it's stored in a felt experience, felt memory. That's why mindset can be extremely powerful. But if we don't access the feeling, sometimes that's what it's required from us to reconnect and expand our emotional vocabulary by feeling and allowing those emotions to transmute. And when you combine the feeling, that moment, you giving yourself, regulating yourself to the point where you can take yourself to that moment, if it's driving your behavior as an adult, that means that you're stuck in time, in that time. So it requires you to go to that moment and acknowledge that that was the feeling, and that's okay. And then you can integrate mindset, process that emotion, and remind yourself that you're safe, that you made it, that that's not really a life or threat situation, because that's how it was stored in your body. So it's really reconnecting back with our emotions, with our nervous system, regulating, and then incorporating mindset to take that emotional memory that it's felt by the hand and help it moving through. Did that answer your question?
Sort of. And what other practices or techniques or apps or routines can someone put in place to regulate their nervous system where they generally feel unsafe and in a cruel, scary world?
Yes. So you cannot work with something that you don't even know that it's there. So the first step, if you don't know where to start, is to increase your awareness. Right. I typically use an analogy of, like, imagine you have a spider on your back and you don't know that it's there. There is a risk, right, to your health. But for you, you're not even, like, you're completely oblivious because you don't know that it's there until someone comes and say, hey, hold on, you have a spider in your back. Then in that moment, Lily, it becomes a choice. It becomes a choice. So that's what self-awareness does to us. It grants us access to information that turns into choice. And when you connect on a regular basis to your thoughts, to your emotions, to your physical reactions when you're triggered, to your behaviors, and you start collecting data about yourself, then you will see how patterns are present, how stressed you can easily become just for someone like not agreeing with you. That used to happen to me, and I completely dismiss it as a therapist, right? But then when you work with self-awareness, information becomes available to you, and then you can make that choice. So nurturing self-awareness is one of the huge, most important things. And also, there's a tool that I kind of like practice that I coined. It's called the recycling technique. And it is, we have all sorts of experiences at emotional levels. And if in any moment we're feeling that we're stressed or overwhelmed, or that we will love some peace, you can easily access a memory where you felt peace and take yourself in your mind to that moment and Imagine, reimagine everything that was present in that moment and bring that moment of peace to your present moment. Because even though if you're thinking of a past experience, if you're thinking in the moment of now, you're retraining neurologically your body and your mind to access that emotion. And we can do this with all of those good emotions. And that's how we can tell ourselves, you know what? I get to like enjoy more. I get to access these emotions. I get to have a tool that if I'm feeling stressed or upset or sad, then I can just like help myself in that sense. But we need that awareness. So these are the most powerful tools that have been extremely helpful for me and my clients, among others that I use.
Thank you. Now imagine that you feel like you're not good enough and you've kind of built a strong suit to combat that, where you overperform, you try to outlast and overproduce and do like the most possible until burnout. And you're like this soldier, this warrior that kind of keeps going even if there's no fuel to go on. How do you go from that to becoming truly, authentically fulfilled and successful? Because it feels almost like it feels like there's nothing that you could do that could truly fulfill you, because there's always a new goalpost. There's always like a new mountain to climb. There's always like a bigger thing that you need to do, and everything kind of appears to be endless.
Yes. And this is such a vicious cycle you can easily get stuck into if you're in this situation, whoever's listening. Recognize first that this is something that will require identity work because identity is tied to your nervous system, is tied to your survival brain. And to change anything to your identity, it will be very difficult, very hard if we're not aware that that's who I believe that I am. So whenever people work on anything, if you are experiencing burnout, overwhelmed, and while having this image, and trust me, I have been there. I have been there. I was a therapist that experienced panic attacks to the point of fainting. So I know, and everybody would turn to me, oh my God, you have your life together. That's so good. But it was an identity that was keeping me hostage that you need to outperform in order for you to be worthy. And when I understood that and understood that that wasn't true, my true identity, it's a point of making a decision. Who truly am I? That's a lie. And when you start breaking, because anything that feels uncomfortable, please know that anything that doesn't feel that makes you at peace, it's a lie. That's not your true state. So learning how to discern and to identify what is your true identity and what's not. I typically like to use an example of like classifying emotions into two buckets. There are so many emotions. But those that makes you feel like at peace and love, creativity, curiosity, those are our natural states. And when we struggle is because we're stepping outside of our natural state. And if you're operating that way, there has to be a decision. How much the painful and the hurt, struggle and the hurt, it's really causing you to live that way, and you have to make a decision if you're ready to really step outside of that. So it comes with a decision and understanding and awareness and getting some help, right? Getting help from someone that can identify it and spot things that we normalize, that we just like dismiss easily, but they're pretty much survival. So there's hope. Just know that that's not your true self. And if you're struggling, it's because your authentic self is calling on to you.
Thank you. How did
So,
you discover that the difference between survival-based success and true success?
because after almost 20 years up into my relationship, I experienced a marital crisis where I was facing divorce. And this was so, it was a blessing in disguise. My husband and I were able to work things out. I can say that just in advance, but I'm telling you, I genuinely went out in life saying things like this. I'm confident. I'm so lucky. I'm so grateful. I have everything in my life. Like I have the perfect like family. People will look up to me. I always had the job. I always made everything. But quietly, and I get goosebumps like in my alone time, like I was just like felt so little if I wasn't doing anything, if I wasn't doing something, if I wasn't pursuing and going after things. And when my husband and I had the conversation that something wasn't working out, at first, my first reaction was to blame him. I'm like, after everything, and like, I cannot believe. But then eventually, a revelation and self-reflection came to me that saying, like, you always, like, you're blaming everyone, but right now you're here alone in this house. And why are you experiencing that struggle? And Lily, that was a pivotal moment for me because I had to make a decision to say, I need to look inward. I need to look inward because if I am the, because as a therapist, I knew that you were the owner of your emotions. If you're experiencing that, then I had to look inward and follow the trace. So something just to give you something more practical for you and your listeners. I made a commitment to write every single day, even if I had no idea what to write. Like to journal every single day. And there were days that I was just like, nothing is coming to mind, but I made a promise that I'm going to journal my feelings out. And after we were separated for 10 months, in about like 5 months of separation, I took it upon myself to go back to every single journal entry and highlight common patterns, feelings, emotions, distressing thoughts. And I couldn't like no longer see those patterns. The unworthiness was so, and the abandonment was just so present. I couldn't deny them. And that was kind of like the beginning of like really doing that survival work and that nervous system and identity, which no one escapes.
Thank you. And how did that change your relationship with yourself and with your environment?
It changed tremendously because when I owned that those wounds were very present in my life, because at first, for example, my parents divorced and my father wasn't that much around, and he would say things like, I'm gonna pick you up, guys, and then he wouldn't show up. So I always dismissed that as an adult. Like I went over that, I worked through it, and I was able to talk about it and never like triggered me or anything. But little did I make a connection that things such as like my husband wanting to hug me and me pushing him away was so connected to abandonment. Or in the middle of a conversation, him trying to correct me, and I was just like getting so defensive and getting information because I was extremely smart and I knew things because I'm a therapist, you're not. I know human behavior, right? That adopting that attitude kept me blind. I was like with that spider in the back. It kept me from seeing those wounds. And once I acknowledged that these wounds are very present in my life, it's kind of like if I lifted up a veil and I was able to see all of these things that I'm highlighting now verbally. Because we can see things in others, but we don't see those in ourselves. That's the crazy part. I was able to see these so clearly in my clients, but never in myself. And that was the beginning of me self-soothing and regulating and healing that and identifying that survival identity and adopting and embracing my authentic one. And things automatically started to fall in place. Even like the conversations with my husband went smoother, with my daughters, with my family members, with friends, with clients. Everything started to shift and started to feel lighter. And even if I was busy, I was like happier and more connected. And this is a process that it's always still going, right? You unlock one level and then another one, like new one comes up. But that was, it was just so life changing. And that was kind of like the process for me. And I've seen it also for a lot of the clients that I've worked with.
Thank you. So what was the difference energetically? Did you find like a mindset shift? Like in terms of like you saw yourself as worthy, and because of that, you had all of these personal breakthroughs, or was it something else?
So I had to combine the mindset, and this was the part that was missing for me, because at first I went to like around four therapists. I was constantly listening to podcasts, reading books. I read over, I don't know even how many books in a year, like almost like 50 books. But the shift came for me when I integrated mindset with nervous system regulation and emotions. So not only for me to say I am worthy, but just like how worthiness feels. How worthiness feels. And one of the most things that like surprised me about myself is the unwillingness to receive love. If my husband were to just like serve, and I come from, mind you, let me just gonna give you a little bit of context. I come from a Latino background where the woman is the one always serving the men. So for me, for my husband serving food to me and giving it like in my hands, it felt like so uncomfortable. I was like there's something wrong with this. It activated my nervous system because I'm the one that needs to serve. I cannot receive like attention and love in this way. So things so subtle like that. And for me just to sit down and say thank you. Sometimes when even like someone paying a compliment, for me not to say, oh, this old thing. No, just like, wow, thank you so much. Keep it coming. I love it. And at first, it felt like if I was betraying myself and if I was like an imposter saying things like that or accepting things like that. But then, like, understanding and integrating the mindset, just to answer your question, with emotions at the same time was what, like, helped me really transform, like, faster than anything in the past I've tried.
Thank you. One thing that I've had in my journey for healing, and I really am still working on that, in terms of healing my wound for unworthiness, is that I remember many years ago, about 14 years ago, when I started dating my ex-partner, and he kind of told me that he was kind of like expecting for, his girlfriend, wife, whatever, to basically cook for him, to have the house in order, and to basically do everything. And then his responsibility was like zero in the house, And for me, it was like so normal that this would happen, Like it was like, yeah, of course, like, that's like, of course, that's like the thing to do, right? And I was like very happy doing that, And I actually like tidying and I like organizing. So it kind of, it made me happy doing that as well. And I also considered it like a good trade-off because he was helping me a little bit with my tech, like if I had to like set up the computer or do a PowerPoint or whatever, he would like fix any tech issue that I had. And he was really useful to me because like, I mean, I would do 100 cleaning hours just to like have like a computer issue sorted for a few minutes, Because it, if I had to do, I really would take 100 hours to fix that. Interesting, the thing that happened gradually was after a while, I noticed that, for example, he would eat and then he would leave the plates on the table, or wherever he kind of fancied leaving the plates for me to wash. And if I didn't immediately wash them, he would get very, very anxious. And if I like got out of the bed and I didn't make the bed, he would also get very anxious. And if, let's say we went traveling somewhere and if I didn't immediately remove all the stuff from the suitcase, he would get immediately very anxious because he got used to having like an ultra clean house. And I mean, I'm an ultra clean person, but I wouldn't normally have this thing about immediately kind of getting it done, perhaps in the way that he was expecting it. And after, I think 13 years, we kept having this argument about, okay, why didn't I wash the plates immediately? Why didn't I unpack the suitcase immediately? Why didn't I do whatever else immediately? And I kind of realized, actually, if you kind of occasionally put the dishes in the dishwasher, your arm is not going to break, like I think you'll be fine. And if you occasionally put the stuff out of the suitcase by yourself, at least your things, not mine, I think you'll be fine as well, And then initially he was very indignant about the whole situation, but with time he realized actually he will be a lot happier if he puts the dishes close to the dishwasher, not even in. So he would like build this mountain of dishes for me to put away. And I remember that I think a few months before we broke up, he put the dishes in the dishwasher for the first time. And it just felt like so, like I had gained so much ground, you know, and he started cooking for me. He started doing a lot more things for me. And somehow he became like this guy that I hadn't had before, you know, and I wonder like, why now, you know? And I kind of realized like gradually I was doing a lot of like affirmations about how I am loved and how I'm respected by millions of people. And I think my self-esteem went up as well. And also for a really long time, I was, you know, like advising him about different things and he didn't want to listen to anything I said. But then we traveled to this place in Peru. And then all the different coaches that were there, they were like, you know, I know you tell Lily that, you know, she doesn't have experience. She doesn't have that, but I'm like learning so much from her. You should really listen, you know? And it's like, the thing, like, I just noticed like gradual tiny changes. But the interesting thing is that it all came from me. Like, I had manifested this. So I'm wondering, like, what do you suggest for people that actually blame other people? Because I think we're all sort of like expecting others to be in a certain way. And when they are not in the way that we expect them to be, we kind of get angry, we are upset, we are like sad, we feel rejected, we blame them. You know, we have all of these negative emotions because of how others treat us. And we feel triggered, especially when certain things that they do remind us of other things that happened in the past. Like when I'm, when someone is rejecting me, I'm thinking perhaps about how I was rejected when I was younger. When someone abandons me, I'm thinking about how my dad abandoned me when I was 3. So like, how does someone stop this circle of blaming others? And then start kind of getting this awareness about, you know, like actually everything that's happening in my life is my.
Yeah, that's so powerful. And there is a powerful question that one can ask, is just a matter of, are you really open to listen to the answer? Because there's no accidents. Nothing is by accident. And if anyone is in a relationship, even if they're not happy, and if you're blaming or anything, there is something, I assure you that there is something that you're getting in exchange. But something to say before I say it more. First, be kind and compassionate to yourself, because most of the times we're not doing things consciously. But that being said, there is something you're getting in exchange. Because if someone is being seen as the person to blame for, and they're not doing something, right? And what does that say about you, right? If you're the person that it's constantly helping and fixing, then that means that you are getting something from that. You're getting your worth, you're getting validated. It's a transaction. Every relationship is a transaction. And if you're getting triggered, it can either be a validation for a fear that you're not worthy of more, or it can be a validation that's just probably something that you need to do in order to not to be abandoned. It can be so many different things, but this requires like inner work, and every person has their own particular wounds. Even though I mentioned like most 5, those are like most of the common ones, but the experiences are different. The experiences are different, and we can both have the same experience. And for you, it could trigger the wound of abandonment, but for me, it can trigger the wound of betrayal, right? And for me, I could constantly be fixating on looking at people and how are they doing things wrong? Because like, if like, I knew it. Then that sounds like betrayal, right? So it's being connected with yourself and turning it inward. Because for me, something that, and I can speak of myself because this is so broad, Lily, this is so broad. But for me, I would get so defensive, and I was just like, if for me being right was survival. I wanted to be right. Because being wrong, and this is something that I learned from myself, like what does it mean if you're wrong, then you're going to be, people are going to leave you. Your husband is going to leave you. If you admit that you were wrong and that you did something wrong because you're not worthy, but it was the abandonment lie that my body embraced. So go ahead.
Thank you. Can someone actually be truly fulfilled when they are constantly triggered by external factors?
That's something that absolutely can be accomplished, because the point is not identifying ways to not have those. Like, when we continue to fix our focus and our attention to things that are external, then we're not going to feel fulfilled. But when you retrain your mind to find peace in the things that you have control and only you have control, then letting go, surrendering becomes so easy. And you start seeing life in a different way, in a different lens. And not only that, you get clarity to set boundaries. Because when you get to access peace, when you get to like really let go of things, the clarity of like, how does it feel like to be at peace, happy, in contentment, then anything that triggers you, you're going to be like more aware, like, wait, hold on, I was okay. And then all of a sudden this person came and I'm just feeling like on edge. Oh, okay. No, I'm just choosing to set my boundary and just to protect myself. And like, that's okay. Not to talk ill. It's not about talking ill about anyone else. It's identifying who's vibrating at the same frequency that you are and choosing wisely who and where would you put your energy out there to.
Thank you.
And when you do that, then you feel fulfilled.
Thank you. How does someone raise their frequency? How does someone stay in that energy of flow and excitement and joy and love when you're striving for perfectionism, for example?
Yeah. You have to make a choice. They cannot coexist. It's either one or the other. And remember when I was talking about the identity and like making that choice? It's one of the main problems that we have in society. People have an identity that it's built on survival. And then they do mindset work to self-soothe in the moment without changing the foundation of that identity. But eventually what's going to happen, that's why fulfillment will feel like a roller coaster. Because really, you're trying to build something in a unsteady foundation. It's not going to hold. It's not going to hold. So to find fulfillment and to not only find it, but just to nurture it and make it a lifestyle, it cannot be tied to an identity that it's stemming from survival. It has to be with an identity that its foundation, its abundance, its completion, its enoughness, its happiness, its contentment, its love. Love is the foundation of everything. And what people can notice is that I may be like working towards this identity, but then all of a sudden this one pulls me. And that's okay. That's going to be the process. But just to like, there are things that have to be relinquished and surrender, and it's a non-negotiable. So you cannot be perfectionist and then also be happy. There are going to be moments where you're just going to find joy but it's not necessarily the sense. It could be probably the sense of pride from survival, or like validation, or like, I want you to admire me. That those can feel good, but they're deceiving. That's why they're not long lasting.
Thank you. So how does someone get to joy and love and excitement and other positive emotions for a longer period of time?
When you make space to access things that you love and you do it unapologetically. For me, I love walking in nature. And I know that when I do that, and I'm intentional and aware, I'm like, and I say to myself, I'm doing this because I love it. I love this so much. And this is a moment. And you don't rush that moment. You spend more and more and more time in spaces where you're doing things for you. Then you retrain. This is something neurological. You retrain yourself to be in that space and not in the other. Because sometimes we say, like, I self-care, I do my nails, but then when you're doing your nails or your, like, massage, you're thinking about work and doing all those other things, then the identity that is persistent is a survival one. But like to be truly in the moment of now, that is a good way to start. And connecting with the things that makes you like joy, that gives you joy, that are not necessarily like the achievement and like validation from that. Like, right? What are the things that make you happy, for example? What are the things that you enjoy doing?
Is that a rhetorical question?
Yeah, it's a question, yeah.
I mean, I love dancing, swimming, walking. And
right? So, yeah, being intentional in those moments and just like connecting and being in your skin. And where does happiness feel like reflects in your body? People sometimes don't know. Like when you're happy, where does that show in your body? When you're swimming, when you're dancing, like, does it feel light on your shoulders? Does your stomach, your heart feels like very light, right? It's like connecting at all levels and really soaking everything in. Because a lot of times people don't know how happiness feels. I know that tingles. For me, love feels like a tingling sensation in my cheeks. And it feels like a warm and like a careless sense of like, I don't care like what happens. I'm just like where I need to be, right? But a lot of times people cannot even describe that because they don't spend that much time in those spaces.
For me, love feels like I am a really gorgeous angel. Like I feel so beautiful when I feel in love, or when I feel like a lot of self-love, or when I feel a lot of joy. I just feel very, very attractive. I do. And I become incredibly magnetic to people, you know, like people on the street and like people on social media, and like I go viral, you know, like all these different things happen when I feel like I am in a bubble of love and joy and excitement. And I am become very magnetic and charismatic, especially at events as well.
That's amazing. And yeah. One thing is that I'm not sure if like this is what you were referring to, but one thing is being in love, or another thing is being in the state of love, right? Unconditional love is something completely different too. That's amazing.
Yes, but interestingly, I find that when I am in a bubble of love, whether it's self-love or in a state of love, I find that it's like it becomes easier to attract what you want. Do you also find that?
Yes, it comes like so naturally. Everything falls into place. Yeah, I have had moments where I'm just like feeling so blissful and in a state of love, and then I'm craving something, and my husband comes with the thing that I'm craving without us like even talking. I'm like, oh my God, this is just amazing. And I go, thank you, God, because I know that this is something that you did. It's something that you did, because how else is possible?
Thank you. Tell us about some of the case studies of entrepreneurs or women that you have worked with that have become more authentically fulfilled and successful with your help. And tell us about where they were and how did your process kind of help them?
Yeah, this is so, yes, one that's coming to mind, and it was a woman that was considering even selling her business because she was so overwhelmed. And when I asked her, what is it that you would like to prioritize or to work? I'm telling you, we had like a list of 10 things. So there were so many things going on. And then we were able to identify what to focus on first. And of course, she shows the relationships in her life. And interestingly enough, when we started working on her relationships and things went at a deeper level, everything else, including her business, started just to fall in place automatically. Even like her profits grew, but it's like energetically and emotionally speaking, she was more connected and more open and more like focus on seeing things that before she wasn't seeing, because stress and perfectionism, it blocks you. It blocks your sight. So her relationship improved tremendously. She even said her husband wanted like to take us and out of dinner because he like would be able to see the difference in her before they were argue for things. But then eventually they just like felt way more connected. And at the end, relationships are one of the most important things that we even become entrepreneurs, right? To have that freedom in relationships. And this is one area that I've seen a lot of entrepreneurs like struggle, like high achieving performing women specifically. That's kind of like the Achilles heel. Sometimes in business, they can be like powerhouses, but then in this area, not so much. And there are other reasons for that, but this is one woman that came to mind when you asked.
Thank you. What other process would a person who is suffering from burnout and overwhelm go through? For example, for me, if you were to work with me, I can tell you I don't have 10 things. I have thousands of things that are on my list. And of course, you know, with thousands of things, and I can tell you, if we were to work for 1 hour, I could come with 1,000 more things that I can add to the list. And if you ask me, oh, just choose one, I cannot do that, you know? So like, how would someone like that become authentically fulfilled and successful in the face of like being an ultra creative entrepreneur with thousands of ideas?
Yeah, as you speak, I was thinking of one thing that we can focus on, and it's identity work. That's for sure, because it's not an accident. If someone is so extremely busy and so many things in their minds, and that did not came to be by accident. And oftentimes it can even be a protective mechanism, right? Your mind, it's just like so like divided into many things and pulled into many things that we have no time to look inward and to do any work. Why is that? And that will be a place to start, but this is something that can be hard for people. So that's why with the people that I work with, they really like want to do the work. They have to want to do this work, because it's not just like a journal and meditate and take time for yourself and self-care. It's beyond that. It's like really breaking patterns to the point that it's that we're touching the identity. Right? Because at least that was it for me. I did all the work. I did journaling, and there, a lot of these tools were extremely helpful, but it was really the identity work that helped me reveal and gave me that sense of freedom and connection with myself and my authentic self.
Thank you. Tell us where entrepreneurs and women worldwide can connect with you.
Absolutely. I'm all over social media platforms, and my name of the company is Insightful Essence. I also have my website, insightfulessence.com, and you can easily just access and connect with me. There's a contact page. I also have a podcast, and you're more than welcome to be a guest on, and it's called Insightful Success, where I talk and I like have guests, and also I talk a little bit about the concepts that I practice with my clients.
Follow me for more interviews with world's most innovative health changemakers to live your healthiest life ever.